And you call the ramp up to the war in Iraq diplomatic exceptionalism.
That's exactly right.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, anytime you say to a leader of a country whom you decide to, you know, is going to be confrontational to the United States, or your posture towards this individual is confrontational, that you are in violation of various UN resolutions, and you want to enforce those resolutions on that individual, but at the same time, you yourself may be in violations of certain UN resolutions. Other regimes around the world are equally as despotic. And my mind right now is on the government of Khartoum.
Yeah.
A very despotic government in violation of all kinds of UN resolutions, and nothing is done. Then you take it upon yourself to be the arbitrary police force, to arbitrarily apply the rule of international law, to arbitrarily apply enforcement of UN sanctions against these regimes, and you yourself have violated, you know, the very spirit of democracy in Iran, the spirit of democracy in Guatemala, the spirit of democracy in Chile, the spirit of democracy in Nicaragua. Did I call that diplomatic exceptionalism? In other words, you can do X, Y, or Z, but the next man can't do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, if you want to, you know, take that kind of exceptionalist posture, I just believe that there are more pragmatic ways to achieve your desired result than arbitrary military action.
Yeah. So it's like an example of, like, do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're sort of ramping up now, it seems. We're a very tenuous relationship with Iran. Where do you see this going as we head forward in 06?
The Iranian situation, I mean, you've described it very well, is tenuous. I mean, to try to get Iran to steer away from its nuclear ambitions is very, very difficult for the United States. There are so many different catch-22s. There are currently underway two approaches. One has been practically applied, and I've already mentioned that. We've spent $70 million to conduct a psychological operation within Iran to create enough dissent within Iran to destabilize the government. The United States and the neorealists who are pushing for that particular policy are gambling that the dislike in Iran of their president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, will be enough, with a little bit of help from the United States in propagandizing the population over there, to overthrow this guy. Because the Shia community in Iran did not like Ahmadinejad until he came out and he made some of the very abrasive statements towards Israel, claiming that the Holocaust never happened, which was ludicrous, claiming that Israel should be wiped off the map, which is suicidal.
Yeah.
And also, his drive towards acquiring a nuclear weapon as perceived by America. President Ahmadinejad says that they want nuclear technology for peaceful purposes. America insists that it is something darker. So we're going to have a hard time in getting them to modify their plans in Iran, simply because 70% of the crude oil from Iran goes into China.
Yeah.
China is a very hungry dragon. As a matter of fact, they're feeding in our backyard right now. China controls both ends of the Panama Canal. They're conducting a bunch of trade agreements right now in Latin America with countries that are growing vehemently anti-American, primarily because of some of the the national security blunders that we made in Latin America in 1973 in Chile and 1954 in Guatemala, and forcing the Washington Consensus on many of those countries, which is basically the structural adjustment agreements as offered to these countries by the IMF and the World Bank, having been followed by many of these countries, resulting in a reduction in their per capita income and a reduction in their gross domestic product. In other words, when they listen to what Washington has told them to do, it has resulted in a monumental failure in their economies. Their economies has been asphyxiated as a result of following these protocols, and now these people are reacting to that. So, you know, and China is there filling this gap that America left in its foreign policy relationship with our Latin American neighbors to the south of our border. And they're beginning to fill it quite well. And also, in doing this, in my opinion, I think that they have pretty much rendered the Monroe Doctrine obsolete and irrelevant, which is very, very sad. President Kennedy, in his inaugural address, said that this hemisphere intends to be the master of its own house. And he said that as a message to every communist regime of the Eastern Hemisphere who sought to establish outposts in the Western Hemisphere. The Berlin Wall came down, but you do have a communist country politically, albeit it is in a capitalist country economically, and I'm talking about China. You have a communist political ideology establishing relationships which are very compromising to America's interests in our own hemisphere. So, you know, and that relates to our situation in Iran. You know, I don't think that China and Russia and the rest of the nations of the UN Security Council will ever give their consent for military action against Iran under the alleged drive within Iran to acquire nuclear weapons. The International Atomic Energy Agency, as headed by al-Baradei, has concluded that Iran is at minimum 3 years away from the development of the capabilities of enriching weapons-grade uranium. And more realistically, they're about 10 years away from being able to, produce weapons-grade uranium. Therefore, the sense of urgency which the Bush administration is trying to characterize for the American people in the name of, you guessed it, national security,
yep,
to deal with this situation in Iran is unjustified in the eyes of the other members of the UN Security Council. Basically, only Freemasonic elements in France, England, and the United States, French and Anglo-French, Anglo-European and Anglo-American Freemasonic individuals and institutions are the only ones in favor of the ultimate action against Iran, which is military force. Now, recently with the President and the Secretary of Defense have tried to deny any battle plans for preemptive strikes against Iran, but they are contradicting their own 2006 national security policy, as well as contradicting the 2002 Nuclear Posture Review, both of which call for the preemptive use of nuclear weapons. And Iran is one of those pressable targets in that in 21st century battle plans. So I think that the military as an option is one that America cannot choose. I think that it would create manifold complications for America. First of all, America needs Iran's help right now in Iraq to help bind up the divisions in the Shiite community in Iraq. But if Iran comes forth and they offer that help, if the Ayatollah al-Sistani ever steps forward, because with a word, he could bind up the Shia community in Iraq, in my opinion.
Yes.
He can get the elements of Muqtada al-Sadr. He can pretty much neuter them, and he can get the country to coalesce behind Ibrahim al-Jafiri. They can allow Muqtada al-Sadr to settle into the background, and the Shia community would be deemed fully engageable by the United States, and I think you would have a greater chance of a central government coalescing in Iraq. until that happens, you won't see a coalescing of a central government in Iraq. As a matter of fact, without the help of Iran and without the help of the neighbors of Iraq, I don't think that a central government materializing in that country is going to happen. And it makes me want to examine a three-state solution with some sort of an agreement for profit sharing in its oil. And I think that would give us the imperative then to bring our troops home. But, going back to the Iranian situation, all this stuff ties together. And I know it seems like I'm jumping around, but all of this stuff does tie together. And going back to Iran, the members of the U.N. Security Council are not going to go along with it. Now, if the Bush administration decides to do what, in my opinion, is the unthinkable, and implement military strikes against Iran, Iran could do a number of different things. I think Iran could possibly instigate chaos in Iraq and further destabilize the country, further decreasing the probability that America would redeploy its forces out of Iraq closer to the Iranian border and stage an invasion of Iran. Second of all, Iran could begin to really ramp up its drive towards acquiring weapons-grade uranium, and they would probably be able to get the help of the Soviet Union in that area, or Russia in that area.
Yeah.
Also, China wouldn't like it very much. The Iranian situation, as you described, is very, very tenuous. You would do nothing more than create more nationalism in Iran. You would make the $70 million that you spent there on this propaganda campaign pretty much money wasted, just like we wasted $3 billion with the Mujahideen. I wouldn't say it was a total waste. I think Brzezinski's plan to exacerbate the Soviet capability through a proxy effort by utilizing the Mujahideen and bringing down the Soviet Union was brilliant, but the byproduct has been extremely harsh. You know, the attack dog that we created and trained ended up biting us on September 11th. Nonetheless, I mean, as Dr. Brzezinski said, which do you prefer, the big red dog or a few angry Muslims? And, you know, that rationale was fine. Had we handled the angry Muslims differently?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the linchpin. That's the key point there. Had we handled the angry Muslims differently, it would have been a brilliant series of foreign policy moves. We would have, vanquished the Soviet Union. Everybody gives Reagan the credit, but I think Brzezinski deserves most of the credit. I don't make any apologies for making that assessment either.
Yeah.
But I think, in dealing with Iran, we're in a catch-22. I mean, if you strike them militarily, you're going to have to deal with reprisals from the other industrialized nations, more likely probably economic reprisals. I think China would probably, move quicker towards diversification out of dollar-denominated assets. The $2 billion that we're borrowing from China every single day to finance deficit spending in this country would dry up. I mean, hell, in the month of May alone, we spent $85.5 billion. That was a record. The biggest imbalance in U.S. history.
Wow.
Just in the month of March, I meant to say. So, if that money dries up, we're in heat, big trouble.
Yeah.
We need the money. We need to continue borrowing the $65 billion a day from China because of the imbalances and because of the propensity of this particular Congress and this particular administration to spend beyond the capabilities of America's system of collecting revenue. If they decide to diversify out of dollars as some retaliatory strike along economic lines against the United States, the first area that would be hit in our country would be the government-secured enterprises, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The mortgage industry would be hit extremely hard. The Federal Reserve would have no choice at that particular point than to acknowledge and fully recognize the housing bubble that Alan Greenspan helped to create in the name of deficit reduction. Ben Bernanke says he doesn't even recognize a housing bubble. As a matter of fact, he says economic bubbles are not recognizable except in retrospect. They would have to recognize them at that point, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
Monetary policy would have to be crafted accordingly, and the Federal Reserve would turn on the printing press like we've never seen before. It's not unrealistic to foresee the Federal Reserve taking interest rates all the way down to zero the way Japan did to deal with this shortfall in foreign capital.
Yeah.
That's why I included a whole chapter in Thieves in the Temple on the dynamics of stateless capital.
Mm-hmm.
We need that money.
Yeah.
Damn it, we need it. And if it doesn't come in from China, then the taxpayers of the United States are going to have to fork it over. Or we would be hit with the worst tax of all, an invisible tax, inflation, by the Federal Reserve activating its printing press to cover the shortfall, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would be rendered pretty much virtually insolvent.
All right, last question here for you. Now you paint kind of a gloomy picture at the end of Thieves in the Temple, and you're not shy about using the term New World Order, and you seem to imply like an impending collapse of the entire system, because the whole world seems to be swimming in debt as a result of this worldwide economy, like you said, countryless cash, or how I messed up the phrase there, but...
Stateless capital.
Stateless capital, there you go. So do you foresee an impending collapse and the emergence of a new world order? And I also want to point out that you make a compelling argument for the present economic system being the true mark of the beast in Thieves in the Temple. And that's worth noting and checking out when you pick up the book, folks. That's a great part of the book. But do you see that this may be the final stage toward a worldwide economic new world order? And
well,
we'll see it.
We're already in that. I mean, we have that already. You see, the mistake that Christianity makes, this mistake, in my opinion, that modern theological science has made, is that when they read the 13th chapter of Revelation that talks about the mark of the beast, they only think of something physical.
Yeah.
The mark of the beast is not 666 tattooed in your hair. It's not a biochip under your skin. It's not a barcode on your credit card or some barcode stamped on your skin somewhere. That's not what it is, albeit it may be a manifestation of the mark of the beast. But the mark of the beast in its true ontological and ultimate sense is nothing physical. It is a spiritual and psychological mark. When you look up the word mark in a dictionary, it means to characterize. A lot of sports writers have said that Barry Bonds is an a-hole. Pardon my expression. But you know, they say he's an a-hole.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, his character has been marked. You know, if a person is, if a contract is taken out on a person, they say, okay, well, he's a marked man.
Yeah.
If you look up the word mark in the dictionary, it means to characterize, as the 19th century was characterized by the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
If your consciousness is totally consumed by the relentless pursuit of gain, the way the plutocrats who established the Federal Reserve 93 years ago,
yeah,
this coming December 24th, if your consciousness is totally consumed by the relentless pursuit of gain without regard for righteousness in any way, then you have the mark of the beast. Because that mark says that you can't buy or sell except you receive the mark. Now, granted, in just trying to survive under this current economic system, you cannot operate outside of the system. There have been organizations which have brought forth alternative currencies, and they work in small and very closed systems. There have been alternative ideas that have been brought forth by very brave patriots, people like Ron Paul,
mm-hmm,
and others who I admire, who I laud, who I uphold high, who inspire me. But these ideas are not allowed to take on shape or form within the consciousness of the public because the media is bought off. And they won't allow these ideas to be bought for. So consequently, I think that we are living in the system that John described. But the mark of the beast is nothing physical.
Yeah.
It's talking about a psychological in a spiritual state of mind. You know, if your consciousness, as I said, is marked by avarice, unbridled greed, by a plutocratic agenda, then you've received the mark of the beast. And yes, we are in that system. I don't believe that that system can survive because it's built on principles that violate immutable, universal, spiritual principles. Mm-hmm. And a beautiful analogy is the so-called laws of nature, Newton's laws of physics.
Yeah.
I think that they are an allegory to spiritual laws or the law of spirit that the Bible talks about. For instance, Newton's law of gravity says that if you jump off the Capitol Rotunda on your head, you will die. You violate the laws of gravity, there's a price to be paid. It's immutable, it's unchangeable, it has no respect to persons. In the same way, universal spirit law, that law which guides the ducks, thank God, to the south every winter because I love taking a few of them and roasting some duck breast on the grill. I love it. The immutable spirit law that controls and coordinates all things, both animate and inanimate, mm-hmm. both material and incorporeal, that immutable spirit law, when violated, is no respect of persons. And, you know, the ramifications for violating that spirit law will be just as assuredly carried out upon you as when you violate the laws of physics and the laws of nature. In other words, you know, we've gone away from these spiritual laws which have been prescribed for us. And these laws basically tell us that we have to be honest. We have to be mindful of the harm that we can inadvertently bring to others, particularly, you know, when we're talking about national security. You know, the mere shifting of our weight can sometimes cause entire governments to come unhinged. And if we're not mindful of that, if we have no regard for that, then we're violating spiritual laws. You know, we're supposed to be our brother's keeper. All, everything that the Bible tells us is real.
Yeah.
And when we violate those things, there's a price to be paid. So, you know, no. The current economic system, which is built on greed, which is built on avarice, which is built on usury, which is built on dishonesty and weights and measures, it cannot exist into perpetuity. It has to come down. It's going to collapse under the weight of its own, what word am I looking for? Under the weight of its own pernicious ways.
Yeah.
Under the weight of its own
gravity.
It's going to come down, man.
Yeah.
We are living in a global economy, whether we like it or not. And I think, you know, it pretty much in conclusion to all of this, to national security. And please, people, please understand, you know, this national security issue, I know, is above and beyond the thoughts of most Americans, even a lot of people in the patriot community. We haven't connected the dots yet.
Yeah.
It's just as important as all of the activism against the IRS, as all of the activism against the Federal Reserve. It's just as important. And it, just like the Fed and the rest of these institutions of monetary science, it has become an untamable, malign, self-cannibalizing dynamic in our society. It's just as important, and it deserves just as much as of our attention.
Yeah.
Please understand that unless we begin to correct ourselves, unless we return to some sense of real morality, unless we begin to understand that everything that's done in the name of national security is not designed to facilitate our national security, is designed, some of this stuff is designed to facilitate pure unadulterated greed, and thereby it is pretty much you know, following the mark of the beast. Unless we understand that, then we're going to be on the wrong side of universal spirit law.
Exactly.
And universal spirit law is no respect of persons. I believe the book of Romans, the first chapter, says that they which do such things, and also those who give their consent, you know, everybody's going to suffer the wrath.
Yep.
So, you know, regardless of what religion you serve, regardless of what God you serve, I mean, these laws, as I said, they are universal.
Mm-hmm.
And every religion talks about these laws. They are immutable. In other words, they're unchangeable.
Yep.
And you, me, and everybody else are subject to them. So let us, you know, to borrow a vernacular from the hood, keep it real. Keep it real and try to get back on the path of righteousness.
Exactly, exactly. Man, I can listen to you all day.
Thank you.
You just hit on exactly what I'm trying to say. You know?
Tim, let me say this. I really appreciate the kind words that you have had to say about me. We need more people like you in this country. America is a great country. I believe that we are still, in spite of all of our faults, we're the greatest country on the face of the earth. And I'm talking about the people. I'm talking about the majority of this country. Listen to me, trying to call it a corporation and a company, which is what it really is.
Yeah, exactly.
But this country, the people here are peaceful. They're loving people, and I'm talking about everybody, white, black, you name it. We're peaceful people. There's something special about America. And there have been those who have told me in times past, very prominent individuals. I remember I was interviewed by Alan Combs on my book, These and Simple. He told me, you know nothing is going to happen to this. And I told him, Mr. Combs, I don't know that. As a matter of fact, history shows me just the opposite. That whenever the American people have been riled up enough, they demand change. Unfortunately, in times past, we just weren't knowledgeable enough to demand the right kind of change. That's why I'm trying to enlighten, wake up the American people, and show them what to ask for so that we can get the right kind of change the next time around. And Tim, I got to tell you, the work that you're doing, you're in my prayers, you're in my thoughts. I hope that you keep it up.
I will. Don't worry about that.
I'm going to definitely keep it up because whether people know it or not, little simple people like us, I believe we're the salvation of the soul of this country, figuratively.
Exactly.
You know, so we have to keep it up.
And what can we expect from you? Obviously, folks can hear you Monday to Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, live on the Internet, on the Information Radio Network, www.inforadionet.com. What else do you have coming up in the pipeline?
Also, they can go to my webpage, which is talktoandre.com, and they can order a copy of this new book of mine, Where the Right Went Wrong on National Security and the Left, Too.
Exactly. Yep.
Both of them. We've been sold out. Time for us to get off the government's plantation.
Yeah.
Now, we've been sold out by both sides. They can pick up a copy of that book if they go to my website, or they can pick up the phone. If you don't have the Internet, just pick up the phone and dial 877-962-6657, 877-962-6657. That's my publisher in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And pick up a copy of this book. It is really starting to take off. Thieves in the Temple has gone on to garner a cult following in America.
And how can I get Thieves in the Temple? Same way,
or you can go to Amazon for both of these books. Barnes & Noble, go to your local bookstore. If they don't have it, tell them to order it.
Exactly.
Because it's in the system. They can order it. You know, start a buzz about this stuff. Look, I'm an African-American. I'm a black man. I'm the only African-American in the history of this country to ever write a major work critiquing the Federal Reserve System and critiquing the national security state apparatus. I'm not a cultural separatist. I'm not a victimologist. I'm a voice of reason and a voice of sobriety. I try to, you know, consciously hold high the mantle that people like Dr. Martin Luther King and others have passed on to us, which is to put our trivial differences aside and cause America, make America rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed, and make America be the best country on the face of the earth, which we do have the potential to be, and not allow our own laziness, our own slothfulness, our own indifferences, our own prejudices, our own preconceived notions, our own biases, our own misconstrued mental framework, which is developed within our consciousness, you know, by being taught all kinds of erroneous garbage from our families, from our preachers, from our teachers, from the media, from our politicians, and to reach deep within ourselves and to find that universal spirit being which dwells within us and let it lead and guide us in truth and in righteousness. And I think that we can save our country for our children and for our grandchildren and not allow ourselves to sell out what we know is right in the name of some political party affinity?
Exactly.
Come on, man. I could care less whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. If you're telling the truth, I'm on your side. I'm a registered Democrat. Ron Paul is a Republican, but you know something? I'd probably be willing to take a bullet for him.
Wow.
You know, I won't hesitate to upbraid any Democrat or any Republican or anybody else
exactly. Who
is going to sell my country out and expect me to just be a hack for them, expect me to be a shill for them on the radio, forget about it.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Andre, for being on the show. The books are Thieves in the Temple, America Under the Federal Reserve System, and Where the Right Went Wrong on National Security. You heard about how you can get them, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, through the website. The website he's got is talktoandre.com, and the radio show is www.inforadionet.com. Andre Eglishan, the interview worked out really well for me because I read Where the Right Went Wrong last week, and then we set it up for this Friday, so I read Thieves in the Temple this past week for the second time. It is an amazing book, and you hit it right on the head with connect the dots. You got a great view of the big picture, and you really spell it out for the reader, and that's what I enjoy about the books. That's why I recommend them, because it spells out the big picture for the people who are getting into this, who are trying to understand it. It really spells it out for you. It hits it home for you. It's just an amazing book. Both of them are. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so very much. God bless you. And let's just keep going. The struggle will continue. We must never, ever give up. Never. I don't care how bad it looks. You know, I don't care how far along this new world order advances.
Yep.
We must never, ever give up. Not as long as there's breath in our bodies.
And one more point I wanted to make is that you really understand the dynamics of it. It's not black versus white. It's not Democrat versus Republican. It's not capitalist versus communist. It's rich versus poor.
All of those things are smoke screens. None of those things are assets to the working class. Every one of them are liabilities to the working class.
Yeah.
I would be a fool to arbitrarily hate or discriminate against anyone, no matter what has happened in our past, because from here on in, unless we perceive and understand that we're in a class-based struggle today, then we're all going down.
Exactly. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Tim.
That does it for this week's edition of Been All of America Audio. Huge thanks to Andre Eglishan for sitting down and talking to us. We were taping the interview right before he ate dinner, and he actually went longer than we'd expected to go, and later in the evening than we had planned. So the guy actually was, put off having his dinner so we could appear on the Been All of America Audio show, and, I mean, I appreciate that huge, and I'm sure now that you know that, you're going to appreciate it huge. I mean, that's really cool of him to do. You can find out more information about him at www.talktoandre.com. That's TalkToAndre.com. You can find out more information about his radio show at www.inforadionet.com. The books are Where the Right Went Wrong on National Security and the Left Too, and the hugely popular Thieves in the Temple, America Under the Federal Reserve System. Check out those books. You gotta read these books. They're amazing. I loved them. Also, huge thanks to Leslie and Chiron and R. Lee of BeenAllOfAmerica.com for your help and support with the audio series and the website at large. Leslie pens the column on Tuesday, Gray Matters. Chiron pens the Wednesday column, The K-Files. R. Lee stops by binallofamerica.com twice a month with her column, Trickster's Realm. Check out those columns at binallofamerica.com. If you have just discovered the Been All of America audio series, check out the archive. We've got 25 other episodes other than this one here. This is literally our 26th edition of Been All of America audio, season 1. Check out the deep archive of Been All of America audio offerings. We've got just tons of huge names. I could list them, but it would take all day. So check out the Been All of America audio archive. That's at binallofamerica.com. Click the audio button. Click the audio archive link. You'll find it. And if you're a longtime listener to Been All of America audio, you just heard me say we got 25 episodes already in the can. We're probably going to finish up at about 33 episodes. If you want to help us out, click the PayPal button. Make a donation. Every little bit counts. Every little bit helps. If you got some change, throw it in the bucket. We'd appreciate it. Next week on Been All of America Audio, it's part 1 of 2 with Richard Dolan. Richard Dolan is the author of the amazing book, UFOs and the National Security State. This is a must-have book for anyone in the ufology world, anyone studying ufology. It's a veritable history of ufology. I read it this past spring. Finally had the chance to sit down and read it. I've been hearing about this book for years and finally had a chance to sit down and read it, and it lived up to the billing, it lived up to the hype. It was an amazing book, UFOs in the National Security State. We're going to be discussing that next week on April 29th, 2006. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, have a great week. This is Tim Bedall, signing off.